Are you unknowingly sabotaging your spine health every time you sit down to write? As a medical writer, you pour your mental energy into crafting high-quality documents. But while you're focused on engaging your mind, your body may suffer silently. Poor posture, repetitive movements, and prolonged periods of sitting can lead to neck strain, back pain, and other musculoskeletal problems that impact your physical well-being and ability to think clearly and creatively. In this episode of Monday Mentor, chiropractor, researcher, and medical writer Dr. Peter Stein shares some of his insights about spine health, like how your spine supports your cognitive performance and creativity as a writer, practical strategies for integrating better ergonomics and physical variety into your writing routine, and how to take quick and simple micro breaks to alleviate spine tension even when you're racing to meet a deadline. Don't let poor spine health derail your writing career. Tune in now to give your body the same attention and care you give your words. Welcome, Peter Stein. Please tell listeners of Write Medicine who you are and what you do.
I've been a chiropractor for about 21 years. And I'm a freelance medical writer for the past few years as well. I'm about half and half in both, I would say, with a musical background long before that.
So you've had multiple careers, like many people who end up in medical writing in one way or another. We all have, you know, different parts of our characters and our experience that we want to explore, test, express. So it's kind of interesting to hear, you know, you have that clinical expertise, you have an artistic background. Can you explain why spine health is so important for writers to be thinking about, and some things or how ergonomics kind of plays into maintaining spine health?
You know, I realized I should also, I think I left out a little bit of preface material. After a few years of being in clinical practice, I was sort of dissatisfied with the state of the art in the sorts of rehabilitation I do, spine rehabilitation. And so I went back to school. I got earned a PhD in rehabilitation science. And one of the interests that's followed me all along has been in ergonomics and the study and the questions about how we as physical, physical beings relate to our environments, or particularly our work environments. And there are our environmental objects to, for example, produce work, to be productive and comfortable and uninjured at work. And so those questions have been important to me for a long time. I mean, one of the easy things we could say is that spine health, of course, is important for any spine owner. The spine function underpins a lot of what we do as beings. So that's sort of an easy point to make. But also, I actually want to quote you on this, because a while back, we had a conversation about this, and I think I'd been musing a little about how that question of what is the role of our physical selves in the heavily cognitive work we do as writers. Mm. And, you know, one of the things I think I'm going to paraphrase what you said, which was that, well, this is your instrument, isn't it?
Mm.
And, as a musician, that really, resonated. There goes my first unintended pun. It resonated for me quite, quite a lot, because, we have minds and cognitive lives partly because we have bodies. Mm-hmm. And that is the instrument by which we, in important ways, by which we think, and certainly by which we communicate our thoughts. And again, the spine underpins a lot of how we do that. Mm-hmm. It's this thing with all these moving parts, because it allows for such variety and creativity in how we live physically. And so I think that's sort of worth honoring and maybe keeping in mind as we think about this. That's an overriding question of how is our body important to our our mental life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a question that I want to kind of dig into. But thanks for, first of all, reminding us that you do have a PhD in rehabilitation science. I think that's a very important context. And it's kind of interesting that you left it out of your initial description of who you are and what you do. I do find sometimes that, so I'll kind of pose this to you. I do find sometimes that the things that uniquely qualify us to talk about topics are sometimes the things that, because we take them for granted, we don't think about actually communicating them to people, because they are so embodied in what we do and how we think and how we sort of approach the world. I wonder if that's a fair analysis or if I'm overreaching.
No, I think that absolutely, yes, you painted a portrait. absolutely. The way I think about it, sometimes it's hard to tell what you look like if with the spotlight on you. If you turn the spotlight on yourself, you still don't know what you look
like. Yes. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I absolutely experience, or I know that about myself. That's true.
So I think what you're kind of getting at when you make these kind of introductory remarks about the importance of the spine is that kind of key body, mind, emotion connection. That it's so easy to forget or ignore when so much of your work is cognitive, or you think it's cognitive, but of course you are using your body in an instrumental way to produce the output of that cognitive work. And I think that, you know, maybe that's something that we can kind of circle back around to toward the end of our kind of short conversation here, is that mind-body integration, because I do think that's something that, particularly for people who work heavily with clinical data or are immersed in science, often bracket out or put to the side or don't really sort of factor into, you know, the work that they're doing. But of course, what that sets up is a challenge, because when we are not mindful of our bodies, then we run the risk of inviting injury from long periods of time spent in the chair or standing at a standing desk, for long periods of time tapping away at a keyboard, especially if we haven't actually learned good typing technique, which I suspect fewer of us actually have these days. So what are some of the things that you think about or that you see when you are working with or thinking about people who have, you know, injuries that stem from keyboard work, essentially?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And it's, in a way, I think it's one of the most difficult questions I deal with every day. It's sort of, it's so obvious. It's always kind of hitting us in the face. You know, like you said, you've been doing, you know, heavily cognitive work. And then, you know, after an hour or something, you come back to, you know, you come back to your body. It's like, oh, yes, I have this thing.
Yes. My back hurts.
Right. Oh, I'm not just a brain on a stick, am I?
The stick being the spine.
Yeah. And it matters ultimately to the work we do. And every time I look at a poll question on LinkedIn, sometimes you'll see somebody's posed a question, what do you do when you feel stuck as a writer? And I want to say, just anecdotally, I think I want to say that the most common response I see is, I take a walk.
I agree.
That
yeah.
Clears my head. Yeah. It'll be something like that. It's not, I do math problems.
Well, it definitely wouldn't be for me.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just, for me, such a good example of how that our physical life can help feed our mental jobs, or what we see as mental jobs, that turns out to be something we really need to honor on a regular basis. And certainly that's maybe one part of the answer, is that whatever it is, however we're going to address this, it's something we come back to or need to come back to regularly. It's not like, you know, we don't store exercise. We don't store our mind-body connection. We have to keep enacting it over and over again. And like I think you alluded to, we learn or intuit more about that as we perhaps, go through this life and repeat that cycle over and over. We start to understand where those connections in ourselves a little more over time. And so it's not a stationary process either. But so the big picture is that, we do have to absolutely keep honoring that. And we can get more granular from there, certainly. But if that deals with that piece of your question.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. I mean, the piece about walking, well, there's the physiological shift. You get up, you move, you're creating some kind of physiological shift, which is actually doing things to cells and tissue fluids and feeding your brain in a different way. And I think Einstein, is quoted, somewhere as saying that this is exactly what he did when he got stuck. And I kind of think, well, all right, if it worked for Einstein, it's going to work for for pretty much everyone. But there is that kind of physiological shift, which, is the byproduct of, or is the outcome of getting up and moving your body, whether it's a walk or whether it's something else, for sure. And I agree. Movement is often one of the things that people talk about when they're casting out these polling questions. The other part of that for me is, and I think you kind of alluded to that, that the idea that we become more aware of body-mind integration as we get older. Perhaps, I think Western culture does a pretty good job at setting up that distance between mind and body from a very young age. We still have that Cartesian dualism that, shapes how we think about the relationship between mind and body. Obviously, that's changing, and it's people have more access to practices that help to integrate mind and body. But unless you have some kind of exposure to that, it can be difficult to do. So with that in mind, if you're a writer and if you're interested in learning practices or, integrating practices into your daily work that can support your spine health, and in doing so, create some of that kind of integration we're talking about, what could writers be doing? What would you recommend? What are some kind of immediate actionable things that, we can do to protect, support, and promote spine health for ourselves?
Mm-hmm. So, that's an interesting question because, what could we do? What can we do to, realize our body-mind integration? Well, that's a very big question. If we constrain that a little bit and say, what is something I could do today? What could I do right now? Then, we could maybe drill down. I guess I want to preface by making a point about ergonomics, actually, which is, there's sort of, maybe a textbook notion I think some people have sometimes, which is that I'm going to get a thingy, a mouse, a better chair. Or something, and that will, I'll be all set. Mm-hmm. It will, prevent carpal tunnel syndrome, or to relieve my back pain or neck pain or something like that. But we can use a good ergonomic tool badly, can't we? We can squeeze a mouse all day and develop repetitive strain from that. We can still slump in a very good office chair. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's worth inquiring, how do we utilize the objects we use to work? That can be sometimes a nice way of sort of drawing a circle around the problem and making it a smaller problem. You have your computer mouse. How well do you think you use that computer mouse? And that might be a strange sounding question for some people, but it might be a surprise for people to learn that they squash their mouse and they leave their hand there and just squash it all day. Mm. Whereas it would actually make more sense to perhaps just rest lightly on it. They might be surprised to learn that they have their wrist in an awkward position, resting with the mouse, and that it might actually be easier or a less tense thing to do to, leave their wrist more sort of straight and relaxed. So, people can start to inquire about what it is they do with their tools. If, you have a chair that you like, a work chair that you like, well, do you like it because it has a good backrest and that it meets you where you want to be met in, say, your lower spine? Well, good. That's a good thing to know about. Do you actually use the backrest, or do you find yourself peeling off it as the day goes on and you're starting to slump into it? Well, can we use that chair well? So there's the question of, you know, do we use our nice ergonomic tools well? And so that is a way of thinking about it, of sort of connecting to your work in a physical way, simply by how you and your tools make actions happen, make work tasks happen.
It's kind of the cyborg argument in a way, isn't it? You're, instead of seeing your tools as separate from you, they become part of you. And so you do have to start to be more self-aware of, as you say, of how you're using them and how you're kind of integrating them into your working life.
Yeah. I would say that if you put us together with our tools, then what that makes is the task.
Right. Interesting.
Or the motor behavior, to be just a shade, you know, geekier about it. And it's not that, the goodness of the chair or the, you know, specific qualities of the mouse and perhaps where it's located on the desktop, not that they don't matter, or the feel of the keys on your keyboard, the key travel, not that that doesn't matter either. Those can be important things, and you can integrate, you know, as well as you possibly could in theory with a bad tool and get a bad outcome. So we do want to be evaluate tools for their goodness as well. And that is a whole other rabbit hole.
Right. So we've got a little bit of self-awareness, recognizing that your body plays a very important role in the cognitive work that you do. We've touched on thinking about the tools that we use as part of that embodied labor and not as separate from the work that we do. Are there other things that we could, you know, you mentioned going for a walk. Are there other ways that we can integrate movement or, you know, kind of spine awareness into our everyday routine to keep this instrument healthy for as long as it can be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you put your finger on it earlier when you mentioned learning, that there is a learning curve to this. That's maybe part of an answer. And the other part, you know, to make a buzzword out of it, is variety. Mm-hmm. Physically, you know, in our work lives, we tend to like variety anyway. And physically, we want to, you know, our bodies want variety as well. And that's sort of, you know, never more true than with the spine, which again, with all these moving parts, it's an instrument for variety of movement. As to sort of how to enact that, or how to, you know, start to make it a part of your life, you know, probably one of the, you know, if there's a prescription to make, this is very hard to make prescriptive statements about, but, you know, I think an important thing to consider is to make your work life varied physically. It's not that you have to have different workstations, but it certainly makes sense to allow yourself varied work postures. I think people should be able to access more than one work posture that they feel comfortable in. And their work tools, their work environment should support that if possible. They should be able to, you mentioned a sit-stand desk, and I'm all in favor of that, mainly because of the variety it promotes in posture and movement. And then, you know, when you take a work break, which is hopefully a regular occurrence, then, well, you know, what do you do with your work break? For some people, it's a walk, and that's at least close to enough variety. But I think it is, and this is another thing you alluded to, the range of methods or ways to access movement. So you're a yoga instructor. You know, some people have to run and they know it. Yeah. They have to run regularly.
Yeah.
I have to keep up with my Tai Chi and Qigong practices. Mm-hmm. And some people won't necessarily have identified one or the other of these things. But these are things I think are worth discovering, to find out you know, what speaks to you intuitively? What do you look at and say, yeah, I want that. I want to do that, and could fit it into, you know, parts or other of my workday, you know, sustainably. And those, I think, are worth discovering and learning about because again, you can get variety in your movement. And that's one of the most important things I think research is really establishing over and over, is that variability is important in physical health, just as a general principle.
Anything that we haven't sort of touched on that you see as being important in, I guess, spine health in general, but for those of us who are working, you know, in this medical writing field, who are keyboard bound, who are very often not actually getting up and going for a walk or going for a run or doing Tai Chi or anything else, because turnaround times are tight, deadlines can be very pressing, and people feel really constrained and tied, chained to the keyboard. Are there things that people can do in the moment to get some relief, even if they don't have time to get up and go for a walk or, you know, do something else?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is, I want to approach that question with all humility because, after, two decades as a musculoskeletal clinician and researching questions related to that, I can slump with the best of them.
We all can.
I notice this I'll wag the finger at myself and, you know, what are you doing? But, you know, we're all on that learning curve. And so, you know, one takeaway there is, you know, we can allow ourselves some slack there. We're going to catch ourselves, getting tied, getting chained to the desk and sometimes feeling stiff or sore from it. And if we wind up with reversible, sorenesses, stiffnesses, and we shake it off, well, okay, we have some reserves, some physical reserves, that we've, we're able to deal with, that we're able to work with. If we're winding up with changes that are cumulative and we're carrying neck pain around more persistently, well, then that's a conversation with potentially a clinician. And you want to allow yourself to seek the help you do, from somebody credentialed who can really discuss your problem, specifically to you. Micro breaks, I think, are very important. And so I'll push back just a little bit on the notion that when we're being driven by a deadline and this has got to get in by 5 p.m. and we don't have a moment to spare, even allowing for that, do we have 10 seconds? Do we have 10 seconds to turn away from the screen and do a side stretch, stand up and take a breath, walk around your chair? Do you have 10 seconds to allow your eyes to refocus on something else and then get back to it? There's no break too small to be a worthwhile break. And so I think, when there's nothing else, there's still that.
That's a great quote. I love that. Yeah, that's perfect. And that's kind of what I was hoping for, actually, was some sense of what are those really small steps that we can take to just give ourselves some breathing space. Anything that, I haven't asked you about that you see as important in thinking through spine health, just to kind of wrap up our conversation here?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about some of the little things, and again, I don't like prescriptions about, the spine health. It, this is what makes me annoyingly abstract to talk to sometimes about spine health, because it's easy enough to give a textbook description of what a proper work posture is supposed to be. I can quote to you, ears above shoulders and shoulders above hips in a stacked position, and that may be, vaguely correct for one particular kind of work posture, but it leaves out a lot of things. Mm. It leaves tension out, for example. You could have a correct and very tense posture that's not helping with, say, neck pain. So that was sort of a negative answer. I don't know if that was actually helpful. But aside from specifics, I think my takeaways are to, you know, beware of prescriptions, of overly prescriptive approaches to either spine health or work ergonomics. You know, because, in a lot of cases, you know, rigid prescriptions turn out to be either untrue or true only some of the time. And so we can, you know, relax about some of the dictums we hear about ergonomics, and spine health for that matter. The main thing about your spine is to move it.
Excellent. Peter Stein, writer and musician, spine health expert, I'm going to call you that. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights with listeners of Right Medicine.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for chatting with me.
Your body is like a grand, intricately tuned piano, and your day-to-day work is the music you play upon it. Just as a pianist maneuvers through the ebbs and flows of a melodic piece, alternating between vigorous symphonies and gentle sonatas, your body transitions between movements and stillness throughout your workday. Let's lock in some of the key takeaways from today's Monday Mentor. First, balance is essential. Balancing our physical and cognitive efforts isn't just good practice, it's really vital. This balance helps to sustain our mind-body connection, which is crucial in any line of work, but especially for the cognitive work we do as medical writers. Second, movement is your ally. Integrate varied movements into your routine to boost your mental clarity and create a much-needed physiological shift, particularly when you're deep into writing mode. Walking works and was good enough for Einstein. But you can also try out different physical activities to find enjoyable options that provide variability and sustain physical engagement. Self-awareness is key. Self-awareness and natural movement beats prescriptive health dictums, as Peter says. So how can you be more conscious of your posture and spine alignment during work hours and adjust your work habits and tools according to your body's needs? To this end, maybe develop a routine that includes self-care practices to prevent injuries related to prolonged periods of writing or typing. I like to use micro breaks to practice eye exercises or side stretches to manage reversible soreness and stiffness. And I practice stretches for hands, wrists, shoulders, and back. Incidentally, I have a lot of these practices in my Wellbeing for Writers library. Send me a message if you're interested in getting information about that. So what do you do to routinely care for your body during writing stretches? I'd love to know, so please email me or send me a message on LinkedIn. Next up on Write Medicine, Dean Jenkins on how to put learners at the heart of CME strategy. In the meantime, make sure you don't miss out on Write Medicine episodes. Click follow or subscribe on your favorite listening platform. Thanks for listening. Stay curious and keep learning.